are the nonprofits. Or at least, that's apparently what we want you to believe. How do you know that I'm Dennis LeBay? Or that he's Matt Dillahunty? And not just some guy named Eddie we pulled off the street. Heck, when we tell you that it's the 16th of June, 2007, do you just believe us, even though you know full well that this show could have been recorded prior to that date? Face it, you have no idea if this show is coming to you live from the Dillahunty International Studios in Austin, Texas, or not. Just like you have no idea if the intro music is really My Doorbell by the White Stripes. And sure, we'll tell you that the show is sponsored by a nonprofit organization called the Atheist Community of Austin that promotes positive atheism and the separation of church and state, but have any of you actually checked to see if there is an Atheist Community of Austin? Sure, there's probably a webpage at www.atheist-community.org, but anyone can put up a webpage, right? And there's all sorts of ways we can make it seem more plausible, like, for instance, mentioning that the ACA has a happy hour at the Dog and Duck on Thursday nights at 7:30. That's a cute little detail that adds authenticity to the story, but have you actually been there at 7:30 to see if there's atheists present? Have you even checked to see if the Dog and Duck exists at all? Now, you might think that since people can log on to the nonprofit's chat room as we broadcast every other Saturday from 2 o'clock to 3:30, and we mention what listeners say in the chat, that some of what we say has to be true. But we could be making it all up. We could have fabricated the whole idea that you can log in following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com and just made up the listener comments. Even if you checked, and we really seem to have a chat room, and you thought you logged into it, how do you know all the other chatters were real and not some people we paid to provide the illusion of a chat room? I'm not even going to mention how easy it is to fake listener mail. Just go ahead and continue to arbitrarily believe everything we tell you. It's good for you. Really.
Awesome.
Any announcements that we can just arbitrarily accept?
I think so. I was busy with a whole bunch of last-minute stuff, so I missed part of what you announced. Did you talk about the Sunday morning meeting?
No.
Because now the television show is on that the television show is on at a new time.
Cool.
A regular time, 3 to 4:30 p.m.,
okay.
Which means that our morning meetings on Sundays have returned, only we're going to have them at 11 o'clock at Ventana del Sol on East Oldtorf. And I realized we just stretched this way out, and somebody had just asked me to cut the announcement short for the locals since there's so many people listening outside of Austin. All right, sure, we'll cut the announcement short. So there's a meeting, there's a whole bunch of events. We're doing more social stuff, and you can visit the website and get more details, assuming you think any of this is true. By the way, we had one person in the chat room already suggest that there's one quick way to tell, at least for them, whether or not this is live. And he said, if this is live, someone please say fish sticks. But I refuse to say that, because it would be confirmation.
Right, that would give it away. We don't want to do that.
So how have you been for the last 2 weeks now?
Pretty good. Haven't been any big blow-ups on the religion front. So
apart from, like, you know, bombing the Gaza Strip.
Islam. Yeah. Let me close to home.
Oh yes. Because you know,
listeners. Where that is close to home, and that's
we have a listener. Remember a few weeks ago we talked about where we'd gotten mail from and who has written and everything else, and we were wondering if there was a listener in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
There is a listener in Israel, at least to the Atheist Experience show. I don't know for sure about this one or not, but he emailed and he's having an email discussion with Tracy, which I found really fun and interesting. But
a new perspective, another perspective.
Well, I was thinking, some days I just sit around and start thinking about stuff, and for no good reason. And then I start to realize, for example, I watched another conspiracy theory movie the other day.
Oh yeah,
they're all over Google Video. There's this, you know, the loose change crap about 9/11 being an inside job, and then there's rebuttals to that.
Oh yes, I keep.
But I watched one because some of the Rational Response Squad had sent a 30-minute or so clip from it to my MySpace page.
Cool,
and it was a really cool kind of look at Christianity and the Jesus myth as just a retelling of the old Horus myth, and that these were all just astrological metaphors and, you know, astrology religions.
Interesting.
And they show all the parallels. And I've, you know, this is nothing new. I've read this stuff before, and I find it very interesting. The thing is that they flatly make the case that this is what Christianity really is, and that's all it is.
Oh.
And it's such a simplified look at this, because in reality, what I think is most likely to have happened is that these stories do kind of get reformed, reused, adopted by different cultures. This happens, you know, we're going to come in and we're going to assimilate you guys, and with that, we're going to get little pieces of your culture, but we're going to rework it. We know for a fact that it has happened with regard to Christians in Rome, you know, and other things like that. But these documentaries like this tend to take it a step too far and claim that this was never considered literal until about the 3rd century, and then, you know, then Christianity was pretty much manufactured out of whole cloth and portrayed as a real historic event in order to control the masses and set up, you know, the church and the Illuminati and the international bankers and blah, blah, blah. Well, it turns out that this 30-minute segment, which I thought was for the most part very well done and mostly factual, although I think it overstated its case, is a short piece of a longer film that's out now called Zeitgeist. And it starts off with the first bit is Christianity is just a ruse that's been, you know, manipulated from all these other astrological, you know, it's just the horror story retold, and it's used to manipulate and control you. And then step two is 9/11 was an inside job, and oh, by the way, you know, it was just used as an excuse to get us into this illegal war in Iraq and blah, blah, blah. So there's bits of truth. There are a few disparate facts, and they're combined into this oversimplification in order to make the case.
Right.
But for step three is income taxes are illegal. You don't have to pay them. And the income tax was never properly ratified. Those old myths that have been thoroughly debunked, and if you don't pay your taxes based on what these guys are saying, you're going to find yourself sharing a cell with Kent Hovind.
That's right. You don't want to.
Yeah, Kent Hovind did the same bullshit in his lecture. But it continues to say that this income tax and the fiat money system was a completely manipulated scheme by the Rothschilds and everybody else in this international banking. And part of that is very, very true. But it is, I think there's a huge problem with it. I mean, abolishing gold standard may have been necessary. I don't know. I'm not an economist. I'm not a historian. I don't know all the details. But what I do know is that if you're going to claim this large, broad-scale conspiracy, you've got to come with more than half of the story in bits and pieces. But their claim is that these evil bankers, they didn't mention the Illuminati. Thankfully, they did not mention the reptilians.
The dwarves of Zurich or whatever the hell.
But, you know, the whole thing is that these evil bankers, and they didn't call them Zionists, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, that's in there somewhere. Have manipulated the entire world to create a one-world government. They used clips from that old 1970s film Network, where, you know, you're listening to whatever comes out of this television, and you're being dumbed down, and you're just, you know, while there's wars going on. And the thing is, and this is to get back to what I was originally talking about, that's very true at some level.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it,
little grains of truth.
There's a fucking war going on.
Yeah, sure.
And other things going on. You know, we talked about Gaza Strip briefly. You know, there's the killings in Darfur and all these other things. And for the most part, we don't give a fuck.
Right.
We're going to watch TV. we're going to, you know, stop by McDonald's. We're going to do whatever, and we're not going to be angry or concerned about what's going on. We know that we've been lied to get into a war that we shouldn't be in. I don't mind getting somewhat political on this program, but we know the facts to some degree. We know enough to know that this was a huge, colossal mistake. I wanted to play the opening music I wanted to play today, but I didn't have available real quick. It was Minute Works, It's a Mistake.
Right.
But I was, you know, I was sitting around thinking about that, about the fact that, you know, in some ways, because I just finished, or I'm almost finished going through all the Star Trek The Next Generation seasons. I'd picked him up to watch him again because I'd seen almost all of them. And I got thinking, you know, I do quite a bit with the TV show and the nonprofit show and various other things. And I'm kind of jealous about my free time when I'm not doing, you know, activism issues and whatever else. I like to sit down and veg in front of the TV and watch something or fold some paper, play guitar.
We can't every minute be pissed off about something. I mean, it's like, it does you no good.
But I do, you know, it was interesting to watch. I like watching some of these conspiracy theory things because if for no other reason, they're put together in such a way that they do end up convincing a lot of people. As a matter of fact, there's probably people listening right now who have been convinced at least to some degree by Zeitgeist or Loose Change or whatever else. And if so, that's fine. But it's not really fine. But my point is that
it's bad.
They're getting out a message
that
is successful in convincing people despite the fact that there's not really a good reason to believe that that it's completely accurate.
Right.
And the thing is that religion has done this with no reason to think that it's true.
Right.
So these new kind of conspiracy theory religions, their followers, I mean, we risk not only a pollution of accurate history, of the public perception, but we also risk, you know, potentially even stronger religious zealots for these particular causes because there are bits of hard fact truth in there. I mean, you know, and
that the Bible doesn't enjoy.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know, it's
the Bible's all manufactured little bits of evidence. Like, did Jesus change your life? Yeah. Well, then that's evidence that Jesus. No. This is real, actual little facts that you can throw in, sprinkle among this, in this huge just so story, and make it seem really convincing.
Yeah. If you think about it, when you talk to religionists, one thing that, you know. I can't believe how often this comes up on the show is that, well, you can't believe the Bible is completely made up. Those are all real places.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and, you know, we've commonly said, okay, so when archaeologists in a few thousand years find New York City, does that make Spider-Man true? But if they're willing to use the fact that these are real places discussed in this fictional book as evidence that it's true, how much more strongly are people going to be able to make a case when this, you know, look, 9/11 did happen, and here's the gaps because, you know, the U.S. government didn't do a very good job.
We have pictures.
Yeah. And here's this money trail, and we can tie this here, and ta-da, here's the whole story, we figured it out. You know, first of all, I tend to think that when you talk about conspiracies that are that convoluted, basically what they're saying, and this is the key point that always makes me question, they're basically saying that for many years, 60 years, 100 years, perhaps more for those people who want to drill this back to the Masons and others, that you've maintained a conspiracy and nobody has ever developed a conscience.
Right.
Nobody has ever come out to expose this. It's just, okay, we really is this group of people who bear children and leave everything to their children. And, oh, by the way, their children have the same ethical system as the parents, and they want to enslave the human race.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, kids tend to rebel.
Yeah. And good grief, it also rests on the proposition that there are no accidents. I mean, nothing is an accident to these people.
Yeah, and
everything that happens is part of some bigger picture.
Yeah, they've got this. There's
no chance in their world.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because if you made the case, if you redid one of these films, for example, and said that, and then this event happened, and these people decided to leap on it and exploit it.
Uh-huh.
That's far more believable to me than to say that they manipulated everybody into making the event happen.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
We, you know,
accidents happen
all the time.
Good grief.
So that was my one thing for the week, was sitting there watching a conspiracy theory film. I also played some poker in my free time, too. So
cool.
I dig it. And, oh, I got to mention this, because it's supposed to be released tomorrow. We've mentioned the 8-Hour Lunch podcast before. I don't know how many people are actually familiar with it, and I don't remember who mentioned it. I've now listened to all of them. I did this because they sent me an email and said, hey, we'd like to have you on the 8-Hour Lunch podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hell yeah. And so I went and listened to all their podcasts.
Wow.
And they called Monday night. It's Doug and Heidi Humphreys in Salt Lake City. They're ex-Mormons. They have a great little podcast that they're now putting out about every 2 weeks, I think.
Uh-huh.
And
that seems to be the magic number.
It does. They don't just do religion issues. They don't just do atheism issues or skepticism. They've done all kinds of things. They did an entire episode where I think they just cooked curry chicken and then gave the recipe.
Cool.
But I had so much fun talking to him. If you haven't listened to the podcast, Doug does all the music for their podcast.
Mm-hmm.
The two of them get together. They've had their daughter on as well. But it's a much slicker production than ours because we do ours live.
Uh-huh.
So there's this, you get this program warts and all. If I
That's
completely
right.
fuck up, or bust out laughing during one of Dennis's intros, it stays.
That's right.
If we get a few minutes or a few awkward seconds of radio silence, that stays too.
That stays too.
And Doug's got it down to a science, I guess, and it's a much slicker thing because he edits
lots of
but they are incredible. I told them the other day I wish they were in Austin because they are exactly the kind of people that I'd like to surround myself with, like to hang out with. They are bright, they are funny. Heidi's laugh is infectious, even listening to, you know, just to the podcast. And you know, as ex-Mormons, Doug and I are kind of escapees from two different delusions, and it turns out we're about the same age, have a lot of the same interests, and I had a great time talking to him. I think he's going to post that tomorrow. So if you haven't, you can go to 8hourlunch.com. That's all the words spelled out. And I think the podcast should be up tomorrow.
Cool. All right.
There's another one of those periods.
Do we need news now?
Go ahead with news. I'm going to dig through some email.
Might as well give you something to rant about here. Vatican Cardinal calls on Catholics to stop funding Amnesty International. A senior Vatican Cardinal said yesterday that Catholics should stop donating to human rights group Amnesty International because of its new policy advocating abortion rights for women if they have been raped, were a victim of incest, or faced health risks. Cardinal Renato Martino, president of the Vatican's Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace, good grief, accused Amnesty of turning its back on its mission to defend human rights. The inevitable consequence of this decision, according to the Cardinal, will be the suspension of any financing to Amnesty on the part of Catholic organizations and also individual Catholics, said a statement from Cardinal Martino's office yesterday. Amnesty International has betrayed its mission, Cardinal Martino told the U.S. Catholic Register in an interview. Amnesty changed its neutral stance on abortion in April, but its Italy chairman, Pobiati, insisted its new position had been misinterpreted by the cardinal. This has nothing to do with legitimizing abortion as part of a campaign for human rights. It is to do with combating violence against women. Well, that's nice. Why isn't it about legitimizing abortion as part of a campaign for human rights? Well, anyway, it was partly inspired by our experience in Africa, where soldiers rape women in communities they attack to force them to have their children. We also believe women who have had abortions should benefit from medical care, regardless of the reason for the abortion. Moreover, we aim to promote education and contraception to reduce abortion rates.
You know, biblically, if those women aren't betrothed, they can rape them and then pay the
right. How many
father
shekels?
50 shekels or whatever and take them. So,
that's,
I mean,
right.
It makes sense for the Catholic. Finally, the Catholics are actually looking at the whole Bible and supporting, you know, what it says in other places.
Yeah.
On the other hand, fuck the Pope and these assholes who are basically using their position of power to manipulate the masses to say, don't put money toward this cause, which helps so many people. Meanwhile, they're shuffling pedophile priests around from parish to parish and making payouts left and right. Yeah, you guys have really convinced me that you give a fuck about people.
Yeah, now, of course, you know, saying, oh, they're manipulating the masses sounds like a conspiracy theory like we were just talking about, but good grief, it's pretty clear.
it's only a conspiracy if it's hidden. If you've got a guy in a funny fish hat that you have declared to be infallible messenger of God,
right,
and he comes out and says, you know, I don't think we should support Amnesty International anymore, that's it. That's manipulation of the masses.
That's it. Yeah, there's no conspiracy involved. It's they're saying it right out. Yeah.
When my boss tells me I've got work to do, that's not a fucking conspiracy.
Well, in his interview with the National Catholic Register, Cardinal Martino did not see any gray areas. The Church teaches that it is never justifiable to kill an innocent life. Abortion is murder, he said. To selectively justify abortion, even in the case of rape, is to define the innocent child within the womb as an enemy, a thing that must be destroyed. How can we say that killing a child in some cases is good and in other cases is evil? And, of course, no one is talking the fuck about a child.
Nope.
Yeah,
you know, I'm pretty sure these folks are against masturbation, too, so.
Yeah, and against condom use and everything else. Yeah.
So I'm not against masturbation. It's sex with someone you love.
Yeah.
So.
I think that's it on that story.
Not only is it sex with someone you love, it's sex with someone you love who knows exactly what you like. And is always in the mood when you are.
Okay, I think we've beaten that one to death, so to speak. We can't get away from it. It's attached to the end of my arm.
Right. So somebody emailed, and I'm not going to give out names right now. But,
right, no.
Can you do a show on the difference between Christian denominations, Nazarene versus Lutheran versus Methodist versus blah, blah, blah?
Not me.
Yes, I can.
You can.
I can't do it today, but I think it's a great topic. There's a couple of topics that I want to hit. Now, I know tomorrow on the TV show, Don Baker is going to talk about atheist humor.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to, you know, some funny songs, some cartoons, some jokes, and et cetera, and take a look at that. Kind of a little bit lighthearted, but also as a way of, you know, showing every belief system, every group of people have bits of culture. And while for the most part our mission is to show everybody that, you know, largely atheists are just like everybody else.
Yeah.
I love my parents. I have friends that I care about. I go about, I live my life. I do my job. I pay taxes. I have to buy food.
Right.
I enjoy television shows, art, whatever.
We do not have horns growing from our foreheads.
You know, I'm for the most part, most of my Christian friends who actually know me well.
Mm-hmm.
Consider me to be a very moral and ethical person. Now, we may disagree on, for example, abortion and whether or not it's a moral issue. But as far as what I actually do in my life, they have no problem with. And it's, you know, I'm just like them, except that I don't believe in a God. And as long as we don't actually have conversations about that, it's not a big deal.
That's right. There's always that minefield you can stumble into.
Sure. And
yeah.
And I don't run around. Right. I don't walk into people's churches. Well, I do, but I don't. I have walked into churches, but I don't go up to the pulpit and scream, "This man is feeding you lies. You must open your eyes, people." Oh, I don't do that.
That's right.
And I don't walk up to random people and say, "Hi, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God. I hear you do believe in God. Do you have any good fucking reason for that?"
And you don't construct a church that teaches people that evolution is true. Turn that around.
I disagree.
The Christians
there.
Do construct museums that teach that religion is true.
I kind of disagree there, because while we don't construct a church that does that, we do build museums and schools that teach that evolution is true. You know why? Because it's fucking true.
True.
This is an observed fact. Now, the finer details of, you know, natural selection is the mechanism, and Darwinism is the model that is accepted, that is continually used. We learn more and more from it all the time. It provides predictions and new ways of understanding all kinds of things. But we can argue about the fine points of it.
Sure, sure.
But there's no biologist, no real biologist,
right,
is going around saying, oh, no, it's a complete lie. We were created 6 to 10,000 years ago. I mean, these are people who go, you know, like to Liberty University to get their degree.
Right.
Michael Behe's got a new book out, which from what I hear is...
It's being ravaged from everybody, from every direction.
Nobody likes Behe's book. The evolutionists don't like it because, well, Behe's an idiot.
Right.
That's not fair. I take that back. He's not an idiot. He
makes plenty of money writing books. He's completed.
Here's the thing. Behe accepts evolution.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why the other side doesn't like it either.
Yeah, he accepts common descent.
Yeah.
He accepts gradual changes with natural selection atom on it, genetic mutations and all this other stuff. And so people from the Discovery Institute have been really quiet about his new book.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, many of the Christians and theologians don't much care for it. And then, in the middle of this, he goes and says, I believe all this, but I don't think it's sufficient to completely explain the diversity and the wonderfulness of human life.
Right. Here's my little gap.
Yeah.
The gap has shrunk so small, it's just one little tiny aspect that now I can cram a God into.
And I think mostly it's because he believes and he's looking for a place to stick that God. But it reminds me of that thing I showed you last week where the evolution of creationism where, you know, and then over millions and millions of years, things evolved and everything else, and that's pretty much our theory, except for one little minor. What one thing is that? Well, you know how when you look at something and you say, gosh, that looks mighty complex. I wonder how that could have happened by nature.
Yeah.
Well, Magic Man done it.
There you go. Have you seen the Onion article?
Yes.
There was a great Onion article where this guy accepts everything about evolution and the life crawling up from the slime through all the things, except the Triassic period.
Yeah. Obviously, that couldn't have happened. I mean, that really, I mean, while that's at a different level, that's Behe.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. And yet, you know, you've got this new creationist museum that everybody and their brother's been talking about, and I've seen pictures.
Yeah, there are several, I think there's a couple of sites out now where there's, you know, a comprehensive number of photographs of all the different exhibits and stuff.
I'm wondering how long before they get sued.
It's slick, but damn, it's such a pack of lies.
Yeah. And everybody and their brother's been coming out against this thing, and I would say that I think they had, 4,000 people the first day they opened?
Uh-huh.
For the grand opening of a museum like that, especially one where, you know, you've got probably 50% of them. I think it's about 50% of Americans are actually buy into young Earth, mm-hmm. according to the latest Gallup poll thing. Seems kind of a low turnout to me.
I don't know. Might be. Also, another thing I've heard, I don't know if this is true, but it seems like the museum is not like other museums where you can wander from place to place. Apparently, it takes you on... You're in a single long twisty corridor that goes past all the rooms and things like that, and you can only view it in the order they want you to view it.
Yeah,
which seems very weird.
It's a way of telling a story.
It's an indoctrination.
Yeah,
rather than here are facts. You know, it's an indoctrination. Yeah, it's weird.
So I got an email the other day from somebody,
uh-huh.
and he dared me to spread this to the rest of the kooks.
A disease?
No.
Oh, okay. Rest of the kooks.
Yeah.
Are we kooks?
Yes.
Oh.
You are a kook.
I'm a kook.
As soon as I can find this.
You gotta find it, man. If somebody's calling me a kook, I want to know why.
He sent it to me, and it was called Evidence of the Crossing of the Red Sea.
Ooh.
And
is he giving a rational explanation for crossing the Red Sea or something? Or?
No, he's republishing some really old crap from biblical archaeologist Ron Wyatt, who was a colossal fraud. But
and what does it explain?
They found chariot wheels at the bottom of the Red Sea.
Oh, God.
And that, therefore, is proof that God parted the waters and
and drowned the...
murdered
the Egyptians.
Yeah. So this guy sent me an email, and just a couple lines, and the first line was, "Bought time you people saved your souls," and I think it was supposed to be about time.
Yeah.
Then he signed it with his name and his... He's like a major and retired from the U.S. Air Force and a pilot during World War II or whatever. I don't know. So he's old and senile.
More of those.
And then he says, "Dare you to distribute this to the rest of your kooks." And for those who want to know, this was old stuff from Ron Wyatt about finding chariot wheels at the bottom of the Red Sea. It was reposted as an article, I think, on Wingnut Daily.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that would be WorldNet Daily, I think. I don't know. And so I sent him an email and said that I'd be happy to spread this to the rest of the kooks. And I said, "The only thing you've demonstrated is your willingness to accept any claim that appears to confirm what you've already believed." And I kind of gave him hell for not exercising any critical thinking or examining the evidence of these claims, because scientists have come out. I mean, Ron Wyatt has claimed, I kid you not, to have discovered Noah's Ark several times.
Oh, yeah, several times.
His house, his grave, his wife's grave, the rock that Moses struck with a rod, Sodom and Gomorrah, balls of sulfur from the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, artifacts from Solomon's temple. He claims he found the Ark of the Covenant, fragments of the original Ten Commandments that Moses broke.
Wow!
He claims all this stuff. And, of course, when scientists come up and challenge him on his claims...
Uh-huh.
He doesn't present any evidence to refute the challenge. What he does is claim that either they're atheists trying to diminish his biblical find, they are other Christians who have different theologies from him and don't want to admit the truth, they are other archaeologists who are jealous of his discovery, or they are some, like in the case of the Ark of the Covenant, he claims that he's found, I guess, the actual Hill of Golgotha, and that underneath it is a cave with the Ark of the Covenant, and that Jesus' blood continues to drip down through the rocks onto the Ark, and that the Israeli government knows about this, and they are keeping the Ark hidden away until all this crap in the Middle East can be sorted out, and they rebuild the temple, and then they'll put the Ark of the Covenant in it.
But they didn't hide it from him for some reason.
I don't know. You know, he got this from inside information, and we're not able to know the fact. So, you know, what I told him was, okay, so let's assume that this discovery is true, and he found some chariot wheels at the bottom of the Red Sea. So what? I mean, are you really saying that the best possible explanation for finding chariot wheels at the bottom of the Red Sea is that an omnipotent, supernatural, transcendent being parted the waters for his favored people to cross on dry land and then closed them in order to smash the chariots?
Yeah.
Because if you are...
First conclusion I'd come to, yeah.
Holy cow, I found a CD out in the parking lot. And I think the best explanation for that is that space aliens came down and abducted somebody from New Jersey who happened to be listening to his Walkman CD player. And they brought him to Texas in order to do experiments on him in the parking lot of my apartment building. And in the process, the CD fell out of his player, rolled over underneath my car, lit on fire, and was miraculously restored to its original state so that I could play it.
Wow. Yeah, that...
Come on! I mean, it's just crazy, and it's nothing new with these Ryan Wyatt things, but he you know, he came back with this, and I was like, you know, I can't believe that, you know, you called us kooks, you know, insane.
I don't think you should call, you know, finding chariot wheels at the bottom of the Red Sea a proof of the Bible until you go back and search all the Egyptian records for a shipment of chariot wheels that was lost, you know?
Yeah.
It's like...
Well, so he replied to me.
He
was not very happy with my response to him. He thought,
aww.
After he called us kooks and everything, I was, uh-huh. you know, I
you
was
were
a
rude.
Little, I was a little rude. I don't mind that.
It's okay. He probably thinks that you deserve to be tortured forever.
Oh, he does. See,
oh, cool.
This guy is a real piece of work. I went, and because he gave me his full name, I went and did a little Google search, you know, because I like to know who's talking to me. And
yeah, yeah.
He claims to speak to God and to have received messages from God, and he delivers them to other people's forums, especially liberal Christians, because, you know, if they're trying to work on any cooperative, you know, non-divisive culture, then they're just as bad as the ACLU and the godless communists. And so he gives this message from God. But anyway, he sent me a second email.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, I'm sorry that I got too personal the other day when I said you were kooks. I was, at the time, late for a meeting. Late for a meeting might explain the brevity of his, you know, but, you know, kooks thing, you know,
well,
stop playing.
I guess that's what Jesus would do if he was late for a meeting, is he would insult people.
Yeah.
Cool.
So he tells me that... he does exercise critical thinking, and he thoroughly examines all claims before he decides they're facts.
Oh, sure.
And I said, okay, maybe I misunderstood him, so I decided to read it.
Okay.
I read his new thing.
Yeah, and
that he
is...
says, sitting around in groups tossing around something like the Bible is not science, and you, too, are not accepting what is already firmly imprinted in your minds. Now...
Something firmly imprinted
that
in
doesn't
mind.
Make a whole lot of sense to me, but
no.
It seems that he's making an assumption that I'm an atheist because I sat around and laughed at the Bible, and that was convincing for me.
Okay.
The fact that things like finding the earth is round is fairly scientific and found in the Bible long before modern man knew about it and still thought the earth was flat, I could go on and on. And he talks about...
Sorry, spheres don't have corners.
Yeah. I didn't bother ripping all that shreds.
Right.
What he did was, he says, he tells me the story about why he's a believer. During World War II, he got up one day, he was a pilot of bombers, checked the duty roster, and found that he'd been reassigned from his regular crew to this other crew whose pilot had died.
Okay.
This was an unusual occurrence. According to him, this never happened. Now... maybe it's just the way he phrased it, but I have difficulty believing that in the entire history of war, he's the only guy who
got
his duty assigned to a new crew because their pilot died.
That seems crazy, but okay.
Okay. So he says this never happened.
Sure. Let's just assume this never happens. Yeah, fine.
So he takes off with his new crew, and he's flying, and his old crew happens to be on his right wing.
Uh-huh.
Guess what happened?
Oh, did they get totaled?
His old crew
got
lit up, and they all died.
That sucks.
And if it wasn't for the fact that God had changed the duty roster, he'd be dead now.
And it wasn't for the fact that God had...
Well,
boy,
isn't it nice that God didn't change the fucking duty roster for the rest of them, or maybe divert, you know, the shell that took them down?
Oh, good.
This is, I mean, if you can...
forget the misses and only remember the hits.
You cannot say that you think critically and thoroughly examine claims if you're going to leap to that and claim that that is your proof that God, you know, that is the moment that you realize there must be a God.
Well...
because you somehow survived a potential accident. You know how often that shit happens on freeways around town where one person gets hit and somebody else had just changed out of that lane and they would have been totaled if they hadn't changed that lane?
Yeah.
Every day, all the time.
Right. And you think the God is managing all that shit?
You know, what reason did God have to save you and kill all the rest of them? But, you know, he goes on and he tells me this story about George Washington's vision at Valley Forge.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you what he says first, because this just... For your information, you should dial in, and then he gives a web address. And I evidently, he's got one of those old rotary dial internet access things.
Yeah, dial in.
And scroll down to George Washington vision at Valley Forge. In the little hut he used for command purposes, he was visited by an angelic being who showed him the future of America. This vision was given to his aide-de-camp when he came out of the hut. It is in the congressional records and is truth. What was shown him was in a vision, and every single thing she showed him came to pass, with the exception of the final prophecy, which is soon to come true. Now, I went and investigated this, because I'd heard about it before. And I wanted to show him how somebody actually goes about investigating a claim.
Okay.
Only took about 10 minutes, because somebody else had already done a lot of the work for me.
Oh, cool.
But I wanted to check a number of different sources. This story first appeared in 1880 in the National Tribune.
That's a little bit late.
100 years after the Valley Forge thing. And it was a newspaper writer telling us, relaying the story from a guy named Anthony Sherman.
Uh-huh.
Now, Anthony Sherman had written this entire vision of George Washington's about 80 years after it took place.
80 years.
And what he claimed was, during the winter of 1777-1778 at Valley Forge, he was there with General Washington, and General Washington told him about this vision he'd had, and then he waited 80 years to write it down, and 20 years later, a newspaper guy reported it. So, if you dig around, you'll find that we still have pension records from those guys.
Ooh.
And Anthony Sherman's handwritten pension records show that up until the end of 1777, he was serving under Benedict Arnold.
Uh-huh.
And in 1778, he joined the battle at Monmouth. He couldn't, unless there was some mistake or whatever else, it's unlikely that he was at Valley Forge during the winter with George Washington.
Right.
Secondly, what we end up having is a newspaper piece of, an internet piece of glurge that is a reproduction of a newspaper article, which is third-hand hearsay from a guy writing his memoirs 80 years after the events that took place. And all of this is about a vision that George Washington had about the future of the United States. Now, if we assume that everybody in this story is being truthful all the way back to Valley Forge, then what we have is George Washington getting a vision. We still have no idea whether it's a vision from God or hallucination or anything else, or whether he's just claiming a vision and speaking in metaphor. But if it was a vision from God, George Washington gets it, and he tells one guy.
Right.
One regular trooper guy. Never writes about it in his memoirs, doesn't tell anybody, doesn't talk to his vice president later on.
Right. There's no independent confirmation of this.
He doesn't feel it's important enough to warn everybody. He just tells this one soldier who apparently was or wasn't with him at the time.
Right.
Then that guy thinks, I don't need to write that down until I'm 80 and damn near dead. And I wonder if maybe he was trying to make himself look a little good. I was friends with George Washington, and he told me about this vision that he got. And, the whole story is just absurd. There's no good reason to think it's true.
And now here's a question for you. Mm-hmm. The prophecies or the predictions, the stuff, did they happen, did they come true before the guy wrote his little story?
Well, here's the thing. No.
No. Did some come true after he wrote his story?
Well, kind of.
Okay.
According to the vision, there were going to be three wars on U.S. soil.
One,
of course, would have been the Revolutionary War
Washington
got the vision. So that one's kind of out.
Right. And there'd be the Civil War.
The next one would be the Civil War, which kind of took place around the time that he was writing his fucking memoirs.
Oh, yeah. That's right, yeah.
And the third one is this one that's to come true later.
Oh.
Now, the guy, I was trying to demonstrate that, he didn't investigate. He didn't thoroughly examine.
But he made a claim that it's in the congressional record, so therefore it's true.
Right.
Now, first of all, it's not in the congressional record. What I think he meant to say is that it's in the Library of Congress. Now, even if it had been in the congressional record, that doesn't mean the story's true. But the fact that it's in the Library of Congress is completely irrelevant, because the Library of Congress has copies of every fucking thing that's ever been published. All those old newspapers are in there. The fact that the newspaper exists in the Library of Congress, I mean, you know what? Stuff Larry Flint's publishes in the Library of Congress.
That's right. I mean,
the Book of Mormon's in the Library of Congress. Are you going to tell me that one's true?
Well, you know, you can't publish something if it isn't true. Yeah, right.
It's complete nonsense. So I wrote the guy back.
Oh, no, you had another exchange?
I told him, you know, here's why you obviously did not do the research, which means you're either delusional or you're a liar, and I have no idea of knowing which one. And he wrote me back and said, you think you've debunked the story and blah, 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 and you have a place waiting for you in the lake of fire, and, you know, go read verse and go read this verse and go read this verse. And
right,
I was like,
you
know. He's not worth my time. He's not worth the time that I put into it, but he's certainly not worth any more time.
But at least now you know about that Washington thing.
Yeah, and I thanked him for it, because now if somebody calls up the TV show with, you know, that, I now have the facts committed to memory.
You'll have it right there.
I know there was a bunch of other bits and pieces of email with people asking questions. I'll apologize if you were expecting any kind of answer to email today. It's just not going to happen. There's a lot. There's been a lot going on. I don't like to bring up my personal stuff, but since I've mentioned it before, there's my company's for sale, and there's some confusion about who's going to be staying and who's going to be going. There was a big rumor that on Friday, yesterday, we were going to have a big company meeting and that our entire group would be dissipated. Which would have suited me just fine, actually, because you know, they've already offered me a big package when I go. But not that I don't have a big package now.
Hey.
But anyway, the meeting didn't happen, and everything's fine. And so I've pretty much resigned myself to not getting stressed out over that, because I can't do anything about it either.
Right,
You know, the whole God grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, and, you know. So I'm just going to hang with it. But what it did was it served as a distraction, plus a couple other projects at work, where I didn't get to go through all the listener mail that I would normally do. I did respond to a few people, and, you know, there's more stuff coming up.
Yeah.
You have more news bits.
I have another news story.
I'm going to check the chat.
It was kind of light this last 2 weeks. But let's see. Teaching assistant quit in protest at Harry Potter. A Pentecostal teaching assistant who quit her job at a foundation primary school after she was disciplined for refusing to hear a child read a Harry Potter book is seeking compensation for religious discrimination. She claimed that the book glorified witchcraft. Well, isn't that religious discrimination?
Yeah.
I mean, so what? Saria Allen, whose case is expected to end Monday at the South London Employment Tribunal in Croydon, claims Duran Primary School in Stockwell discriminated against her as a born-again Christian and put her at a disadvantage compared with teaching assistants who were not of her faith. After 3 years in the job, she quit in July and is now jobless. Oh, horrors.
I'm confused. I mean, because on the one hand, she quit, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But she's... What happened when she was supposed to read a Harry Potter book and refused to?
No, she was supposed to listen to a child read a Harry Potter book.
And why was the child reading it?
For something in school, obviously.
Okay.
Here, read this book and blah, 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 right? You know,
right.
Bring in your own book and read it. She refused to hear the Harry Potter book. This is what I assume.
Okay.
Let's see. Ms. Allen, 47, said the mother of a 7-year-old girl who was a fluent reader had complained to the girl's teacher that the book Ms. Allen had given her was too easy. The girl then chose a Harry Potter book from her reading folder, but Ms. Allen refused to listen to her reading it because God had stated in the Bible that witchcraft was an abomination. She told The Guardian yesterday. The girl went home and told her mom, I also had told the teacher that I objected to hearing that book read because of my faith, Miss Allen said. That doesn't make any sense. That sentence doesn't work right.
I don't know. I don't really know what to say about this because I'm kind of confused.
Really weird.
She wasn't fired. She quit.
She quit.
What happened when? What did they do to her when?
She claims that at a subsequent meeting, the first assistant head teacher, Mark McLaughlin, criticized her as obstructive for refusing to hear the child read the book. She also claims he rubbished her faith and made disparaging remarks about Christian assemblies in schools. He was saying, it's just my interpretation of the Bible and my view. He said, these are your views and you're a minority because of these. He thought I was quite extreme because I'm a born-again Christian. I'm a committed Christian, she said.
Well, if he said those things, he may have been at fault, and she may have some case.
Yeah, a hostile work environment.
But she has no good reason to. I mean, if a kid wants, you know, she's basically trying to impose her religious view on the kids and saying, we're not going to let you read that, or we don't, you know, that is an unacceptable thing to read in the classroom because it violates my religious beliefs.
Right.
Well, on those grounds. She's completely wrong.
Yeah.
You know, no teacher should be able to walk in and impose their religious beliefs on somebody else.
Now, I don't know what it. I don't know what limitations the schools work on in England.
Yeah.
This happened in England.
And we got an email from somebody in Canada. So, you know, I don't know what to say. I know there's some traditional Canada greeting, like, you know, take off hoser or something like that. But anyway, and he was mentioning that, or she, I've completely forgotten, that we're not alone, that there's a religious backlash in some areas of Canada, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I'm hearing that.
A lot of us are completely embarrassed because United States of America, ends up looking like the laughingstock of the world.
Mm-hmm.
When you take a look at like the studies that have been done with regard to societal health. I mean, okay, yes. We are a gluttonous land of plenty.
Yeah.
Where, compared to a lot of other places, we are ridiculously spoiled, but we are also ridiculously in debt. We are...
Yes, I don't know how long socially, this will last. Yeah.
We are socially irresponsible.
Mm-hmm.
We are environmentally irresponsible. And we are trailing the world in science and math for the most part. I mean, I'm sure we come in ahead of somebody, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody who, you know, doesn't have electric light, maybe. And so we end up looking like this, and it colossal embarrassment. I mean, it's just, you know, I've been looking into alternate places to live, despite, and I don't want to, and I don't want to live anywhere but Austin. I've said that many times.
But.
You know, when push comes to shove,
be nice to live in a place where, you know, medical treatment is better than here.
Yeah.
And there are so many places where it is.
You know,
that's embarrassing. Damn.
Yes, I think religion is all bullshit. I not only don't believe in a God, I believe there is no God. I have no good reason to think that one exists. All the ones that I've examined, you know, and thought about and people have brought to my attention seem patently absurd, just like Easter Bunny fairies and I find fairies and Bigfoot and these other things much more plausible than a God.
Now, these little outbreaks of fundamentalism in, like, England with this teacher, and there's bits of fundamentalism in Australia, and it's thing rude in China and stuff. Is it exported from here?
I hope not. I hope that's not our best export.
Oh, God.
But, you know, people often think, well, there's this idea, and I know that, man, there's a bunch of things that we're going to end up talking about over the next month or two,
mm-hmm,
on both shows. I've mentioned I want to cover fundamental epistemology. How do you define belief and knowledge, et cetera? How do you go about creating a worldview that's based on reality? There's also these common complaints about the new atheism, the fundamentalist atheism. I've been accused by good friends who are deists or
basically kind of sitting on a fence saying, yeah, I'm going to keep going to my Catholic church even though I don't believe in a personal God. I believe in some kind of panentheistic, deistic possible God, maybe even just a first cause God, you know.
Right.
And yet, oh, Matt, you know, you're just a little too polemic. Oh, they're confusing.
Dogmatic. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I get accused of being dogmatic. I'm not dogmatic. I wish you can understand that.
You changed my mind in an instant.
Yeah. Show me some fucking evidence. I'm not dogmatic. I'm passionate about the truth. I fucking hate hypocrisy. I hate voluntary ignorance. I don't mind if you're stupid.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not particularly intelligent, if you're not well informed,
we don't mind if you're stupid, but if you're willfully ignorant,
yeah, voluntary ignorance, willful ignorance, it's just, it drives me crazy because you're putting yourself in a position where you're believing something because it's comfortable, because it's comforting, because it feels good, with no regard to whether or not it's actually true.
Just like The Secret.
And wasting your one and only life. And my thing,
one and only life.
As I'm going to start kind of using a couple of different comments when this comes up, one of them is that I'm not trying to take away people's belief. I'm trying to take away the need for that belief, the justification for that belief. If you want to believe something, or if you need to believe that there's some guy who created you as a special creation and loves you and is going to save you and take you away to happy land when you die, okay. What I wish was that, number one, I lived in a world where that belief was in the minority, because that would mean that most people are rational. Mm-hmm. I wish that people didn't feel the need or feel that such beliefs were justified. But I don't want to just yank people's beliefs out from underneath them, because some people need it.
Yeah,
some people aren't ready to face reality.
But then there's another way to look at it, with religion as a mind virus, right? It's a disease.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, these people want to have a disease. And, you know, if they say, you know, oh, if you take away my disease, what will you replace it with? You don't replace diseases with things. You're cured at that point.
You're cured. Hallelujah. You are cured.
It's like, oh, I'm cured of smallpox. What will I replace it with?
Yeah. You know. How can your life have any meaning?
Without smallpox.
Wow. You know? Pretty sure that it has the same kind of meaning that yours does, whatever meaning I attribute to it. You know, I look at it as I lived a number of years, and I wasn't, I don't think, crazy religious.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed life. I appreciated it, and I think most people
thought that about things.
But now I realize that in however many years I'm going to die. Could be tomorrow.
Yeah.
So why not live and appreciate life? And that is not some kind of decadent, hedonistic, you know, live for today and, you know,
oh, God,
to hell
no.
with tomorrow, and I'm going to go out and shag everyone rotten, you know.
Burn all my bridges at once.
No, it's you know, there are some good things about religion. Religion has done some good things and continues to do good things. It may even be essential on some level for certain people. It provides, even though I think it's providing a lie, it provides a sort of coping mechanism.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about grief, someone's loved ones pass away, it can be very comforting to believe that grandpa's up in heaven, you know, waiting for you.
But of course it does that by trivializing the thing.
And what it does is it doesn't prepare you to deal with reality.
Right.
When the going gets tough, when disaster strikes, if your mind has been polluted by the virus of religion, instead of facing the difficulty and trying to find a solution, trying to determine what your best course of action is, or, as you know, with things that you can't correct, maybe your best course of action is to worry about other things that you can fix. Instead of doing that, it puts you in the position of a helpless victim,
right,
who needs to make an appeal to some divine authority.
Right.
oh, God, I've really gotten myself in a terrible mess this time, or I don't understand why you're testing me so, or why you've put these obstacles in my path.
Can you get
but I trust that it's in your will that I persevere, and please show me your God. You know, it just, it absolutely sickens me, but
it
realize that...
infantilizes people.
Yeah, I realize that because people are indoctrinated into religion at a very young age, there's some people who can never get over that. Mr. Wizard died this week, speaking of death and grieving.
Yes, another sad thing.
For those who don't know, because he was before a lot of people's time, Mr. Wizard was a television personality that taught science.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Bill Nye, only...
more restrained, I think.
Yeah, much more... Bill is phenomenal and crazy and makes it fun and entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Wizard, you know, basically taught an entire generation of kids an appreciation for science by doing science and making science interesting.
Right.
Bill Nye goes a step further and makes it not only interesting but entertaining.
Entertaining.
Crazy fun. But
yes, he goes for that, the attention span of the child of today.
Yeah. Yeah. So what other news bits we got?
I'm dry, man.
You're out of news bits?
Out of news bits.
My gosh.
So what the hell do we talk about now? How many more minutes have we got?
We've got about 25 minutes
left. Oh, my God. I'm never going to fill that up with just... I got into another long, protracted discussion on Usenet with that same guy. Trying to get me to say something. We're having the same argument. And it's crazy. He's trying to get me to say that... he's elaborately constructing a straw man version of materialism so that then he can attack it and destroy it. And to do that, he has to get me, as a materialist... to say certain stupid things. And so he's got a long involved argument involving two robots, one that's conscious and one that's not, but they behave the same. And so since they both operate according to the laws of physics, if you can describe both their behaviors according to the laws of physics, then it doesn't matter whether one is conscious or not. The behavior doesn't matter. And I go, No. That's demonstrably insane. I mean, it matters whether you're conscious or not. An unconscious person behaves differently from a conscious person. That alone destroys the whole thing. And I believe firmly that both the conscious person and the unconscious person are biological mechanisms operating according to the laws of physics.
Definitely.
Oh, my gosh. It's crazy.
Well, one of the emails that I got this week was from somebody asking me for advice.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a number of people ask for advice on different occasions, especially about coming out as an atheist to religious relatives and friends, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
This one's slightly different. And I'll leave off the name and everything else because I don't know that this was meant for the airwaves, but I'll just hit the high points.
Hit the high points.
He's got a girlfriend of about 6 years or so, and her father is a devout Roman Catholic. And recently, after 6 years of dating his daughter, her dad finally questioned whether or not he believed in a God.
Uh-oh.
And his girlfriend had told him a while back that if this came up, he should just probably say as little as possible, not try and question or challenge him, not to get into a bait. And to simply just answer yes or no. And so, honestly, he answered no. And then he had to swallow his pride and listen to a full hour of her father ranting about how he was living in sin or going to have to face down for his beliefs or this guy, her father, who he had spent years kind of developing a respectful relationship with, turned into this, condescending...
insulting person. And he was wondering, you know, what he should do about it. And so I'll tell you what I sent him. It was difficult to gain his respect, but you did it. It's unlikely that you'll change his mind about his beliefs or yours by reasoning with him. I think that the best course of action is to simply continue doing the things that gained his respect in the first place. Continue being yourself and avoid discussions of religion. He may corner you for another rant at some point, but it won't continue constantly, or at least I hope it won't. You can listen to what he has to say, explain that you understand his beliefs, you respect his right to hold those beliefs, but you just don't share them. And if you can manage doing it without appearing snide or disrespectful, you could even say something like, I understand what you're saying, but for whatever reason, I'm just unable to believe. I know this bothers you, and I don't want it to be a constant problem or a thorn in our relationship, but I just can't force myself to believe even if I wanted to. So why don't you pray for me? In fact, you could offer to pray with him, or to pray on your own, or even attend Mass with him. Eventually, I think he'll begin to see, as my parents did, that you gained his respect while you were an atheist. And the only thing that changed after he learned about your atheism was his reaction to you. Especially if you've demonstrated a willingness to try to understand and try and you know, show respect towards his belief. It's not going to be an easy lesson for him to learn, but I think he probably will. It's very difficult to stay bitter at someone that you like, especially if they're still being kind to you in the process. Right now, he's worried about your soul, his daughter's future, the home life of his grandkids if you guys get married. So while his beliefs are irrational, his concern as a direct conclusion from those beliefs is rational.
Yeah, it's understandable.
If in fact you believe that, you know, there's one and only way to heaven, and you know you're in danger of going to hell, blah blah blah, then it's reasonable to be concerned. The only thing you can try and do is show him why you don't think the premises are justified. But you know, I think he's fortunate because he, you know, not only did he has he found someone that he cares about and possibly might want to marry, but he's managed to gain the respect of her father, even if it seems like it all might be lost at the moment. So, well, that one's about that.
Uh-oh.
I'm trying to dig through some email.
Right, right.
Oh,
man. We're not prepared.
Some of them were links that people sent me. You know what lolcats are?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. There's been a bunch of them lately. There was one that's really funny. It's got a cat in a box,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of a play on Schrodinger's cat. And, you know, I'm in your quantum box, or maybe I'm not.
Right.
But there were a bunch of others where they attacked Behe because of his new book, and Dembski and others. You know, it's like... So it's hard, you know, I'm not going to describe the image and then do the caption
right.
All of them.
Yeah, oh, I heard another cultural icon get a new treatment. There was the All Your Base Are Belong to Us.
Yes.
The entire skit was done in this Shakespearean treatment. It was just beautiful. It was much longer than the original, but of course Shakespeare is, of course, much wordier than lol speak.
So you folks in the chat room listening to us live.
Yes, listening to us babble now.
Yeah, because oddly enough, I've run out of real stuff to talk about. I'm sure something will pop in my head in a minute, but if you have a question in the chat room, go ahead and post it. Put it in red. I don't know, do something to get
We're
my attention.
Now.
And I'll check on that.
If you don't, we might start talking about free will or something.
Oh, no, we won't.
Oh, darn.
Dennis might talk about free will, because there's nothing he can do to stop it.
That's right. It's an inevitable result of the Big Bang.
But, I don't know. It's been an interesting couple of weeks, and there's a lot going on. One of the things that I can talk about briefly.
Well, then you'd think we'd have more to talk about.
Yeah, it's just that a lot of what's going on hasn't really had anything to do with atheism or skepticism, which is fine. I mean,
there's always political stuff to talk about. Well, we're not supposed to be political.
I was political enough earlier on. One thing that the ACA did was last Saturday, we went to Pride Fest here in Austin. Had a booth set up like we have for about 4 years, and it's just tons of fun despite being stupid hot.
Pride Fest?
The Gay Lesbian Festival.
Oh, sounds cool. All right.
We go down there pretty much every year, and the reason, of course, is that while someone has presented me with a secular argument opposing gay marriage, it's really a secular argument against marriage in general. And I can even buy off on it. But my point is that as long as we're going to allow people to marry, as long as we're going to allow people to enter into contracts, which is really all marriage is, then you need to provide a justification why a same-sex couple shouldn't be able to enter into that contract as well.
Right.
So we go down to the Pride Festival, in part to support gay rights and in part to support human rights and equality across the board, because a lot more goes on at Pride Festival than just concern over gay and lesbian rights, transgender rights, whatever.
Forum for all rights.
Yeah.
And stuff.
One of the things, and this does kind of relate to gay rights, is this movement to lift the ban. And it's
the
don't ask, don't tell policy.
Right.
There's a campaign there to repeal it. And I was walking by, and this girl grabbed me and said, "Hey, would you like to sign a petition to Congress to repeal the don't ask, don't tell?" And without hesitation, I said, "Fuck yeah." And she said, "Ah, you're just exactly who I'm looking for." So I wrote down my name and the fact that I was in the military for 8 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to one of the guys there and told him one of the reasons why I will continue to support the repeal of this abomination. And that is that I was in a position where I was a supervisor of anywhere from 15 to 40 guys at different times. And I had several people serving underneath me. I might want to phrase that slightly different, but who were gay. And there was never a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Until somebody found out.
Ugh.
And then all of a sudden, you need to do paperwork to get this guy processed out of the Navy and dishonorably discharged. And because it's my duty, because I'm stuck there, I was forced to do paperwork to process people out of the Navy for something that I find just to be completely objectionable. This idea that up until yesterday, you had no problem with this person, no problem with their performance, there was no concern, no nothing, and because somebody found out they were gay, now we've got to kick them out, and you're making me do the paperwork. I didn't like paperwork in the first place, but I certainly didn't like didn't like the ones that, you know, it would have been the same as I don't know. I can't even come up with a good example. But in this particular case, the young guy who we had to discharge, everybody had always known he was gay. It was just, you know, with the don't ask, don't tell, you just all pretend you don't know. Well, somebody who was an asshat and offended by the fact that this guy who was on our boat happened to have a boyfriend. I don't know why that would bother anybody. It's not like he was coming on to this other guy. He broke federal law and opened this guy's mail.
Whoa, did he get discharged?
Nope.
Why not?
Because he claimed he found it laying open on there and was just reading to see who it belonged to so he could return it. And it was a letter from the guy's boyfriend.
Right.
So one guy went out of his way to get another guy discharged for something.
That's not even an issue.
And broke federal law in the process. And he didn't get in any trouble. What he did do was piss me off.
Right.
And so for the rest of the time that he was in First Division, his life was as miserable as I could legally make it. And he was, you know, I ran things kind of informally and somewhat lax. And, mm-hmm. you know, most important thing was to get the work done and make sure everybody was meeting their responsibilities. So, you know, if somebody happened to show up a couple minutes late for muster or whatever, it wasn't any huge deal.
Right.
But if it was a repeated
results based sort of
yeah, thing. But if it was something that was a repeated problem, then we'd take them aside and you know mm-hmm. you counsel sure. them or you write up whatever. Not this guy. You're late. You're fucking late. You know I'm gonna stick you on the shittiest details. I'm gonna put you on the latest watches. You know you're gonna have the 4 to 8 in the morning watch. And then immediately go work, and then when you're done with work for the day, you're going to get 4 hours of sleep, and then you're going to go up for the midwatch, you know.
Cool. Matt Dillahunty, agent of karma.
Ooh, almost knocked it over.
Uh-oh. Wow. It's nice to see, well, that is
wait, we
addressing
have a question.
Justice in this world. That's nice.
Yeah. We have a question.
Oh, yeah?
Here we put out a call for questions in chat, and
we got one.
Oddly enough, I got distracted. There's somebody in the chat room who's using the name Ray Comfort.
You want to know about the banana? Is that
if it really is Ray Comfort, please send me an email. I'd love to have a chat with you. So anyway, the question is, can you explain what Jesus actually did? How does him dying save us from going to hell? I just don't get it.
That's a really good question. Yes, it doesn't do anything.
I can tell you what the theology behind it is.
Sure, yeah. What is that?
It won't make any sense in the real world. But basically, first there's this notion of original sin. Adam and Eve sinned and brought sin into the world, and it basically follows everybody, and you're born with this burden already on your non-existent soul.
Right.
And in the Old Testament, they'd make sin sacrifices, where they would take lambs and burn them on an altar, and that would serve as compensation or absolvement mm-hmm. from the sins of the people. Now, I can't tell you why that absolved them. Maybe God just likes the smell of burning flesh.
Well, that's how it worked with the ancient Greek gods. Is you would burn the stuff, and the smell was pleasing to the gods.
It's in the Bible that way, too. The smell pleased the Lord. He also evidently was pleased by some human sacrifices and the slaughter of opposing tribes and the rape of young girls. All kinds of things pleased this fuck. So the excuse was that since everybody has this burden of sin on their soul, we have to have a sin sacrifice. Well, Jesus being divinely fathered...
Right.
Doesn't have this burden of sin on his soul.
So he's basically not human, since all humans have that.
And they sacrificed him as the one final sacrifice that was... It was such a big sacrifice that it covered every sin that had ever come before it, and every sin that would ever come after it.
So are we all saved regardless of whether we're Christians or not?
See, no, that's the thing.
But you said...
See, the Christian dogma goes on to say that this sacrifice, while it was done for everybody, not everybody will accept it. We'll reject it and continue in our sinful... So evidently...
Hey, I'll take it. Sure, no problem. All right. There, I'm done. I'm safe, right?
From a realist standpoint, there's a whole bunch of really good objections about how one person could possibly pay for anybody else's...
Yeah.
Russell's made a good analogy that he's used several times... where, you know, if I'm convicted of murder, my grandmother doesn't get to go to jail for me.
Right.
Under no circumstances would that ever possibly happen.
Yeah. Even apart from the fact that it would be unfair to her, it has no basis for anything.
Yeah.
It's completely ridiculous.
The idea, what it is, here's what I think. If you make up a story, mm-hmm. the more little bits of truth you can work into it, the better.
Okay.
But even more important than that, the more complicated you can make it, the more, it doesn't have to be just, you know, crazy absurd, where it's obviously right. absurd, like, you know, and if you really believe you will be able to hang by your toes from the ceiling with no means of support, you know, things
right.
like that. But the more complicated you can make it, and yet make it seem almost reasonable. And the ties to reason within the Christian religion are this inherent notion that we all have of justice. You see this in
right.
a lot of other religions where they talk about, you know, karma, and as with karma being some kind of cosmic balance to where eventually the evildoers will get what's coming to them and the just will, you know,
prevail.
Because, boy, it certainly seems to suck when you do good things and people shit all over you. So it's nice to think that eventually your good deeds will be rewarded
mm-hmm.
and those people who shat on you will be punished. And so you take that little bit and you convolute it into this mystery. And I went to a Catholic funeral recently and had no clue just how... I bet they said the word mystery 50 times. These people are obsessed with mystery.
Right.
The mystery of your birth, followed by the mystery of your death, followed by the mystery of your resurrection. Lord, please, please encourage us to understand these mysteries. And knowing that we cannot understand these mysteries, please allow us to continue to blah, blah, fucking blah.
Very good.
But... by saying it's a mystery, but it's not just a mystery. It's not, you know, like a puzzle. It's something beyond you. God is so much more than you could possibly imagine. Your brain can't comprehend it. So these things that trouble you, these things that appear not to make sense, they make sense to God. You're not supposed to understand them. You couldn't possibly understand them because you only see this little three-dimensional, materialistic world that
right.
you live in, and God sees everything.
Of course, that brings up the issue, though, of you worshiping something whose motives you do not understand.
Right.
You admit they're mysteries, yet you worship it and do what it says. What the hell is that abrogation of responsibility?
It's called faith.
Oh, that's right.
And that gets me to the one big point that I keep fucking making. We had a caller call in to the Atheist Experience not too long ago, and you could actually hear her sneer when she said logic, as in you guys appear to be very reasonable and very logical, but you don't have any understanding of grace and faith. It completely changed her tone. It was
right.
snide when she talked about logic and exalting when she talked about grace and faith.
Oh, of course. Well, that's what she's selling.
And faith is, as we've said before, it's the permission that we give ourselves to believe things for no good reason.
Right.
There's no good reason to think that there's a God. There may, in fact, be a God, but there's no good reason to think there is. And before we go around discussing theology
right.
and whether or not, well, you see, should we dance or should we drink or, you know, did God really save us this way and what do I have to do to be saved? Do I listen to what Jesus said and sell my belongings, give the money to the poor and follow him and keep the commandments?
Yeah.
Or do I listen to Paul or do I listen to James and it's, you know, good works along with faith and all this other. Before we can discuss any of that, you need to define God, and we need to have a discussion so that we're talking about things in similar terms.
Right. The horse needs to be put in front of the cart.
You need to demonstrate that there's any... If you're not going to be able to produce real evidence, and believe me, you can't.
They never have.
And the theologians have discovered this, and I'll get back to them in a second because they're liars. But the first thing you need to do is demonstrate that there's any good reason to think that anything like what you're proposing exists. I mean, it's no different than any other woo-woo New Age crap. You know, oh, I'm wearing this magic crystal and its resonant frequency helps lift my spirit and keep me positive and happy. Okay, please demonstrate that there's any good reason that wearing a rock around your neck will actually adjust your mind, you know, apart from deluding yourself. I can delude myself into happiness. You need to demonstrate that there's some good reason to think there's a tie between what the crystal is and what it does, and what your brain is and what it does.
Right. We can make an exact duplicate out of plastic. And we can do a double-blind test. And
yeah.
We can see whether one lifts your spirit and one doesn't.
Yeah. But the theologians have discovered this, and they've said, you know, that's why they dismiss all these arguments for the arguments for the existence of God and arguments against the existence
mm-hmm.
of God. Well, they go with this kind of transcendent being that's undefinable,
that's right.
Which, all right, well, we can stop discussion there. You've just defined it as
yeah.
undefinable.
Okay, we're done. Yeah.
It's beyond our comprehension. Congratulations. Anything beyond my comprehension
is, by definition,
why are we wasting
beyond
time?
My comprehension.
But I happen to think that many of these, and you know, they've raised these attacks against Dawkins, and I think I've talked about this last time, so if I'm repeating myself, sorry. But it's, oh, Dawkins isn't talking about any real God. Yes, he is.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
talking about what the people in the pews really believe.
Yeah, what they're telling people.
He's talking about what people who are going to church every Sunday really believe. The Gallup polls show this. They show, you know, there's 40, 50, 60% who don't, or 50-some-odd percent who don't believe evolution, 47% or so, and I'm going to get the numbers yeah. all wrong because I don't have them in front of me, but believe that the earth is 10,000 years old and that there's a divine personal God and that Jesus will come back in their lifetime, and they buy into the Schofield kind of interpretation of Revelation where there's this huge apocalypse coming
yep.
and tribulations, all
He's
of that.
He's talking about the God.
That's what these people are talking about, and the theologians who object to this and say, well, you really just don't understand this sort of sophisticated view of God. Don't you understand? We don't still think of things in those terms of a personal God. An old bearded man in the sky. You silly atheist. You simply do not comprehend the wonderful, glorious things that have been revealed through religion that have led to such broader understandings. God isn't something you can put in a bucket and test for.
Can you tell us some of these broader understandings?
Well, no. They're mysteries, and that's what you just don't seem to understand. The mysteries, your little puny, puerile brain, Mr. claimed atheist, simply cannot comprehend this. You are no different from the peons who sit in the pews and believe that fire and brimstone are about to come. That's such a quaint notion of God.
That's right.
And to all you fuckers, you're liars. You guys are atheists.
Scam artists.
You are atheists because you don't believe in any kind of God at all. This mystery, transcendent, nondescript being that you want to say exists and yet you demonstrate can't exist, you don't really believe in that. None of you do. You have no good reason to believe in it. What you've done is you've come to the conclusion that all of these more literal interpretations of religion are fundamentally false, that they're internally incoherent, that they contradict themselves, they contradict what we know about reality, they contradict reason, they are abominations by ignorant savages trying desperately to understand the world and failing. But they did a wonderful job of trying. They did come up with explanations that at the time seemed plausible and that continue to seem plausible to anybody who hasn't actually investigated reality. You've dismissed all of those things, which means you've dismissed every notion of God, and yet you still want to cling to the concept because you are fearful, because you are cowardly, because your intellect has led you to a point that is incredibly uncomfortable for you, and you can't fucking face reality. So you invent a new God out of whole cloth, and you make him even more mysterious and absurd than the ones that came before it. And you don't really believe in him.
And you close it in pseudo-intellectualism.
You're hiding the fact that you can't handle being an atheist by inventing a God that is beyond the scope of investigation. Definitionally. Congratulations. You have succeeded in deluding yourself way beyond those people who are sitting in the pews that you look down upon. Fucktards. I hate them.
Well, yeah.
Oh, you
all
just,
these people, they all...
You
they
simple-minded peasants, you just don't understand, you know. God is just, ooh.
Well, they all empower each other.
If you don't have a good understanding of reality, if you don't know how to tell the difference between fact and fantasy, and we're going to have to do next time, Jared, we're going to have to talk about epistemology a little bit.
Cool.
If you're not equipped with critical thinking skills, if you're not equipped to make those analyses, you're going to come to bad conclusions.
Yeah.
You're going to look at something and say, well, that seems very plausible, when in fact it's not plausible. It may not even be possible, some of the things that people are accepting. And despite the fact that I've been ignoring the chat room, we're out of time.
Contradictory. Yeah.
We're out of time.
Oh, we're out of time.
Close us out.
There's no more time. All right. Thank you, everyone, for believing whatever we tell you. Like that we'll be back in 2 weeks on the 30th of June, 2007. And you might as well just accept that we're leaving you with the music we're leaving you with, which is My Doorbell by the White Stripes.
Nice catch. And because we're not editing anything, that stays in.
Another little gem, yes.
We'll see you all in 2 weeks. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
I'm thinking about my doorbell.